Grainger knows when you're a procurement manager for an office park, you're not managing one building. You're managing all of them. And to stay ahead, you need to see through walls and around corners. Lights about to fail, filters ready to clog, HVAC on its last leg. If you wait until something breaks, you're already behind. Count on Grainger for quality products, easy reordering, and 24/7 support. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. A very busy week here on the program. Great to have you with us wherever you might be. Broadcasting border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of ground to cover today. And of course, I want to start out with the situation involving Lindsey Graham, who passed away over the weekend rather suddenly. And look, a couple of things here, a couple of major takeaways. First of all, President Trump, this one really hit the president hard, and the president had a very close relationship, close friendship with Lindsey Graham. I don't know, going back, well, over the past couple of years, you might remember that Lindsey Graham was not exactly a big fan of the president early on. And look, I suppose that goes for, I guess, a lot of folks, but for Lindsey Graham, the relationship sort of evolved over the course of the Trump administration. And I think Lindsey saw in our president a man who was sincere, who was a man of integrity. And that says a lot. And it goes a long way for somebody like Lindsey Graham. Now, one of the things I just want to get off my chest here, if we can, is some of the commentary about Lindsey Graham that's happening on social media. And I don't know if you've seen these posts, but they go something like this. Well, you know, we didn't always agree, old Lindsey and I, but, or, you know, he was a sorry so-and-so, but. No. If you've got to go down that path, if you've got to offer a qualified memorial or offering up some sort of a backhanded condolence, you know what, just keep that to yourself. Can you do that? Look, this happens every time a lawmaker dies on social media, and they're filled with all sorts of memorials and tributes. And look, the man is dead. Politics, it doesn't matter. Politics is beside the point. And that's one of the big problems I think we have with politics right now is that, and this happens on both sides of the aisle, by the way, because a lot of the, well, you know, we didn't agree, but a lot of that is coming from MAGA conservatives. And it really is sad that politics has sort of devolved to this. It wasn't always like this, actually. I mean, politics has always been a cesspool, but it hasn't been as bad as it is with the advent of social media. And back in the day, for example, President Ronald Reagan, who I believe if Ronald Reagan were alive today in the world of social media, I don't believe Ronald Reagan would have ever been able to be elected, because you've got a swath of the party that if you don't agree with them on everything, they'll destroy you. You are dead to them. Actually, there are two swaths. And then there's all the rest of us in the middle. You have the far right of the party, and then you've got the establishment. And then there are all the rest of us. Inevitably, I receive some sort of mail at least once a day, and people accuse me of being a closet Democrat. I know they're probably doing drugs, but again, it's just ludicrous. So anyway, I just wanted to say something about Lindsey Graham. Guy was a good and decent man. I mean, he grew up and he really lived. His story is really fascinating. I mean, this guy really lived the American dream. It's the American story. grew up in abject poverty, lived in the back of his dad's pool hall. I think his dad was a bartender. His mom and dad died when he was very, very young, I think in his early 20s. And instead of shipping his sister off to live with relatives, Lindsey Graham raised his own sister, just like he was his daughter. As a matter of fact, Lindsey Graham adopted his sister so that she could receive his military benefits should he die, because he served in the Air Force for well over 30 years. He served in the military. This is a guy, he fought for the unborn. He was staunchly pro-life. He stood up for religious liberty. He was a war hawk. And what I appreciate about Lindsey Graham, and he never held a grudge. That was the thing about Lindsey Graham. He would fight you on the issues, but at the end of the day, he was still your friend. He did not hold grudges. These days, man, people hold grudges. It's brutal out there. And Lindsey Graham wasn't one of those guys. I have great respect for that. As a matter of fact, Lindsey Graham would go out there, and he didn't care who you were, but if you had an R after your name, he was going to go out there, he was going to raise money for you. And I'll tell you, I have done that here locally with the Republicans in my area that are not exactly the most conservative in the world. Some of them would be considered rhinos or moderates, but you know what? They had an R behind their name. They were the nominee. They got support from me. And that's how I've always lived my political life. But anyway, all these folks out there that are attacking Lindsey Graham, and he's getting people, the left is completely unhinged, and they're literally celebrating the death of this man. I just don't understand that. That's evil. That's demonic in my estimate. It is. It's demonic. And as Grandma Starnes used to say, if you can't say something nice about somebody, it's just best to hush up. Or as Medea would say, put the shut to the up. Oh, they also say the guy was really, really funny. And I've got a couple of clips here I want to play. And we're going to get into the whole politics of it all. We have Chad Connally, who used to be the chair of the South Carolina Republican Party. He's going to join us here momentarily. And we're going to talk to him about what happens next. President Trump wants Senator Graham's sister, Darlene, to become the next senator. And my only question is she a Republican? That would be my only question. Is she a Republican? But there are a lot of folks that are chomping at the bit. A lot of people also very concerned about the circumstances of his passing. And this is interesting. I was on a American Family Radio early this morning doing a long-form interview, and they said, what do you make of all these conspiracy theories? Well, I don't think they're conspiracy theories. And hear me out on this. It's no doubt that Lindsey Graham hated Russia, hated Putin, and Putin and his goon squads have been known to take people out using all sorts of drugs and medications to give the impression that the person died of some sort of a cardiac event. So all of this happened when Lindsey Graham was in Ukraine. He flew back home and talked to President Trump at 7 o'clock in the evening. By 1 o'clock, the guy was dead. So it's not out of the realm of, there's nothing wrong with saying, well, wait a second, is there something else going on here? You know, the other part of this is you have the Iranians who had been marching around with posters of Lindsey Graham's head with a bullet in the middle of his forehead. They were wanting this guy dead. As a matter of fact, there are some in the Iranian government, whoever's still left alive, who hasn't been blown to smithereens, and they're taking credit for the death of Lindsey Graham. And then there's the other, and the working, and by the way, Kash Patel did not do anybody any favors when he said the FBI, and it's the way he framed it, I'm going to explain this to you, that gave the impression the FBI was investigating, when in fact what he said was the FBI is here and we're available to offer whatever resources are necessary. There was no need to go public with that, because as soon as he did, everybody thought the FBI is investigating. That's what the big headline was. So look, I don't think it's a conspiracy to ask, okay, are we sure that he died from this tear in his aorta? Is that Is that what caused his death, or is there some other nefarious reason for all of this? And look, those are fair questions to ask. This is not as if it's happening in some sort of a vacuum. And what bothers me are the people. There are people out there. How dare you? How dare you ask? What do you mean, how dare me? These are legitimate questions to ask. I mean, for crying out loud, the Iranians just tried to kill Donald J. Trump at the NATO summit in Turkey. So you think it's a stretch to suggest that maybe Lindsey Graham was taken up by Iranians because of his devotion to Israel, or by the Russians because of his devotion to Ukraine? I'm just asking here. That being said, there were conversations had, and Lindsey Graham said he wasn't feeling well. They whatever it was, they said, you should go to the hospital immediately, and he said no. He had things he had to do. I think it was going to be meet the press yesterday or something. He was supposed to be on meet the press. And he said, no, I'll check into it later. Let me tell you something. That was almost me about 8 weeks ago, and fortunately, I've got a staff here that just drives me insane about my health. And I made sure to go and immediately get checked out. Otherwise, I would not be behind this microphone talking to you right now. Had the exact same sort of a heart situation. And thank the good Lord that I paid attention. So it's a terrible story. We're going to get to the bottom of it. And again, this is the preliminary autopsy they did. So they're still waiting on all the toxicology reports. So a lot of this is just too soon. But it certainly, I don't begrudge anybody for saying, okay, wait a second, was this natural causes or did something else go down here? And that is a legitimate question, and it'll get answered. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Want to play a humorous bit. I just think this is funny. And then when we come back, I'm going to play some audio from Lindsey Graham at the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. I believe this was Lindsey Graham at his finest moment. I know the president had some things to say about that as well. Here is, though, Lindsey Graham back in 2010 when he was asking Justice Elena Kagan, she was in her confirmation hearing, about what she did on Christmas Day. Take a listen.
Where were you at on Christmas Day?
Senator Graham, that is an undecided legal issue, which, I suppose I should ask exactly what you mean by that. I'm assuming that the question you mean is whether a person who was apprehended in the United States is...
No, I just asked you where you were at on Christmas.
You know, like all Jews, I was probably at a Chinese restaurant.
Great answer. Great answer.
You know, I could almost see that one coming. I thought,
yeah.
I
just... Me too. So you were celebrating Hanukkah.
Senator Schumer explained this to me earlier.
Yeah, he did.
If I you might, with, no you... other restaurants are open.
Right. You were with your family on Christmas Day at a Chinese restaurant. Okay.
Yes, sir.
That's great. That's what Hanukkah and Christmas is all about.
I love it. He was known to have a great sense of humor, really a wicked sense of humor. And that's just a smidge of that. All right. Today, also, the one-year anniversary of the assassination attempt on President Trump. Do you find it odd that we still don't know anything about what happened on that day? That is unusual. So, look, we're going to take a break here. We're taking your phone calls as well. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. Again, that number, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Before America was America, Roger Williams argued that conscience must be free. This weekend, Salem News Channel's America 250 film series presents Church and State. Roger Williams and the founding of freedom of religion. Discover the story behind one of America's most consequential ideas. It's the America 250 film series, Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, this weekend on Salem News Channel.
Well, All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. So coming up, Chad Conley is going to be with us to give us the lowdown of what happens next in South Carolina. I was reading something in the industry trades over the weekend, and I wanted to share this with you. It caught my attention. And one of the things that we take pride in, Dylan, on this program is our calls we get from our listeners. And really, they become a part of the listeners are a part of what we do. Without them, without their calls, well, it'd be sort of a ho-hum show, I think.
It would just be you talking for a while.
Yes, exactly. And so when I saw the headline of this story, I thought, oh, I'm interested in this. Jesse Kelly is a radio host. He broadcasted another time slot with iHeart, and he was interviewed by Barrett Media, which is one of our industry trade publications. Why Jesse Kelly refuses to take live callers during his Premier Networks show. And in the course of this conversation, he said that he actually he doesn't like taking calls from listeners. And he said that calls, this is a direct quote from Jesse Kelly, Kelly no longer takes live listener calls. Quote, calls suck. They're just the worst thing in the world, and I always hated them. Calls are a crutch. Now, this is a guy who was a construction worker before he became a talk radio host, so I don't know how long he's been in the radio industry or the business. He also went on to say, calls are when you run out of things to say. Let's go to Bob in Sheboygan. Nobody tuned in to hear Bob in Sheboygan. Nobody whatsoever. The radio host went on to say, and then when you go to Bob in Sheboygan, you know what's brutal for everyone in the United States. Hi, how you're doing? How are you doing? I'm good. How are you tonight? First time, long time. The guy who's stuck in traffic needs some form of entertainment, and now he wants to drive his car off a bridge. That is awful, and I won't do it anymore. So he said that I was a radio listener a long time before I did it. The second it was, let's go to the phones, I couldn't change the channel fast enough, so I just don't do it. By the way, it's also something that Michael Berry, another talk radio host, apparently taught Jesse Kelly. When I first got a show, it was a one-hour show late at night in Houston. Berry basically banned me from taking calls, and he said, you need to learn. It's a skill you have to learn. You need to learn how to sit behind a microphone and entertain. So basically, you've got these talk radio hosts that are now saying blank you to callers. This is beyond me, but okay. Here's the deal. I would like to think that we have a pretty entertaining show here. Noon to three. We've been doing this a very long time. And from day one, I told our crew that we had to have listener participation. Now, sometimes we get lousy calls. That's just the way it goes. But a lot of times we get calls from our listeners that take us in a whole different direction. And they're not the only ones. Quite frankly, there are some in the radio industry who are rather snobbish and say, why would, I know one in particular who said, why would I ever take a call from a listener? These are people who don't go shopping at Walmart. They've probably never been to a Buc-ee's. Pretty sure they've never been to a Chick-fil-A or an In-N-Out. You know, these are the inside the beltway snobs. And unfortunately, radio is filled with these kinds of folks. Now, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, specifically whether or not you think that calls from listeners are a bad thing. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. You know, we're taking your calls on calls. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. Wow. What a way to endear yourself to your audience. Jeez, Alou. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Happy to have you with us today. I want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to our good friend, Chad Conley. Chad is the founder of Faith Wins, one of the top organizations that is mobilizing people of faith around the country. And guys, please let me know when we get Chad ready to go here, and we'll get to Chad. Right now, though, I want to go back before we bring Chad in. I want to play some audio from Senator Lindsey Graham. This is Senator Graham back in 2018 speaking at the confirmation hearing of Brett Kavanaugh. Cut number one.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham, that you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. God, I hate to say it, because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process. You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend. Do you consider this a job interview?
The advice and consent role is like a job
interview. You consider that you've been through a job interview.
I've been through a process of advice and consent under the Constitution.
Would you say you've been through hell?
I've been through hell and then some.
This is not a job interview.
Yeah.
This is hell.
This
is going to destroy the ability of good people to come forward because of this crap. Your high school yearbook. You have interacted with professional women all your life, not one accusation. You're supposed to be Bill Cosby when you're a junior and senior in high school. And all of a sudden you got over it. It's been my understanding that if you drug women and rape them for 2 years in high school, you probably don't stop. Here's my understanding. If you lived a good life, people would recognize it. Like the American Bar Association has the gold standard. His integrity is absolutely unquestioned. He is the very circumspect in his personal conduct, harbors no biases or prejudices. He's entirely ethical, is a really decent person. He is warm, friendly, unassuming. He's the nicest person. The ABA. The one thing I can tell you, you should be proud of, Ashley. You should be proud of this, that you raised a daughter who had the good character to pray for Dr. Ford. To my Republican colleagues, if you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I have seen in my time in politics. You want this seat? I hope you never get it. I hope you're on the Supreme Court. That's exactly where you should be. And I hope that the American people will see through this charade. And I wish you well, and I intend to vote for you, and I hope everybody who's fair-minded will.
All right, that was Lindsey Graham delivering a ferocious defense of Brett Kavanaugh. And by the way, President Trump saying this was probably one of the most classic moments in the history of the Senate. Well, I want to go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line right now and say hello to our good friend, Chad Conley, the founder of Faith Wins and former chair of the GOP there in South Carolina. Chad, first of all, wow, what a shock. What's been the reaction across South Carolina over the past 24 hours?
Well, Todd, great to see you, and thanks for having me on. Look, it's devastating. I texted him happy birthday Friday. He texted me back and said he was coming home. And looking forward to talking. It's stunning. My phone was blowing up. I got up really early for church yesterday and prepare my Sunday school lesson like every Sunday. And it was just overwhelming. Hundreds of texts and emails and phone calls. I was on the phone by 6:30 with the current state chairman looking at the state law. What do we do now? I went through this with Jim DeMint, and there's a very fast rant, but people are shocked. Lindsey did far more. And by the way, thank you for playing that whole clip. Lindsey did far more behind the scenes that was conservative than people ever knew. And he probably wasn't good at telling the stories, but a kid who grew up above a pool hall and a liquor store, and now he's sitting with kings and sheikhs and prime ministers forming Middle Eastern geopolitical direction. It's a great American story.
You know, it is a great American story. And again, he's also, for the record, a Southern Baptist, a longtime member of Corinth Baptist Church there in Seneca, South Carolina. So props to the Southern Baptist there. But he was also a man of faith. And, you know, again, he wasn't Billy Graham, but he stood up for the pro-life movement, and he also stood up for religious liberty. And Chad, I think we're going to miss that voice in the Senate on specifically those two issues.
Man, Todd, we are going to miss him. Not just our state, but the nation. I think the international community is going to miss this voice too. I did a pastor meeting with him right before the primary in early June, and I had 45 pastors. You know my model. Put a bunch of pastors, influencers in the room representing tens of thousands of congregants, and Lindsey was awesome. But I had him tell his testimony story, how he came to the realization he could not get to heaven without Jesus. And although you're right, I mean, he was all over the world. He was traveling, but I believe he's in the arms of Jesus right now. I'm confident in that. He won over so many people that day. We had some pastors who walked in that room in Anderson, South Carolina at Oakwood Baptist, where I hosted the meeting. I had pastors from multiple denominations and multiple counties, and three of them were like, I'm not voting for Lindsey. I'm tired of it. He's got to go. He's been there too long. And I said, look, pastor, I want you to listen to him. Because we live in that world where if you don't agree with me 100%, you're a demon or something, right? And you know, Lindsey won over all three. He was relatable. He was funny. He told his testimony. But he also explained his reasoning. And he said, look, I want to save babies and I want to take out terrorists. Well, that wins over most of our crowd, right? Because they realize he's completely authentic in that. And so I don't think people appreciated it, but he stood up for life. He stood up for conservative judges, for religious liberty, and for Israel. Man, that checks a lot of my faith, my Christian boxes for sure.
And yet there was a lot of hatred directed at him from members of his own party. There are a lot of folks upset that a cult accused him of being, you know, bought and paid for by Israel, the Ukraine thing. And he and I had disagreements on Ukraine from day one. It was interesting. Lindsey was, my understanding is he's a guy who never held a grudge. He would fight you, but at the end of the day, he was still your friend. Unfortunately, we don't have those kinds of politicians. Chad, you've been in politics for a long time, and you've also been a Christian for a very long time. Politics is not church. It is rough and tumble, but at the same time, you've got to make sure everybody's fighting for the same team here.
Yeah. You know, I got a personal story. In 2012, I was state party chairman, and he had voted for Sotomayor and Kagan. So I called him. I said, look, Senator, you're getting beat up. He said, you get a lot of phone calls. I said, oh, yeah. He said, how are they running? I said, about 200-1 against you. He said, look, I believe my constitutional role is advice and consent. I read it that way, and I believe I'm doing this in a consistent pattern. It'll come back. And after the Brett Kavanaugh thing, he and I saw each other at an event. He said, remember that conversation? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, I believe I might be the only person on the planet who could have said that. I said, Lindsey, I believe with all my heart we would not have had Roe v. Wade overturned had you not stood for Kavanaugh. Because you think about it, if Trump caved on Kavanaugh, if the Senate caved on Kavanaugh, all those candidates that have been vetted by groups that you and I like would have been out of there. We'd have never overturned Roe v. Wade, and I think Lindsey Graham is an unsung hero in that because of what he did for Kavanaugh that day.
Chad Conley is the founder of Faith Wins, and he's joining us today on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. So, Chad, let's talk about next steps. Politics still goes on, and the Republican majority keeps getting slimmer and slimmer. We understand the president earlier today suggested that Lindsey Graham's sister should be the replacement. I have one question. Is she a Republican, Chad Connolly?
Yeah, Darlene's awesome. I mean, listen, if anybody heard Lindsay or Darlene tell the story of what Lindsay did for her as his little sister to even adopt her and raise her, you'd never hate on Lindsey Graham. But I think she's perfect. I heard this last night. I know that Governor McMaster has been pummeled with lobbying from every angle. So I'm praying that he does appoint Darlene. She's a perfect placeholder. She would absolutely vote like Lindsay would vote. She would do the right thing. She would let the staff coach her on stuff. And she has no interest in the seat. She don't want to be there long term. So it is going to be a free-for-all, and it is a fast ramp, Todd.
Speaking of free-for-all, who are you hearing as names? I know Nancy Mace has already jumped out there with some very, very inappropriate memes. You've got Ralph Norman, whose name is being batted about. Who are you hearing?
So those two for sure. There are actually three that ran for governor that all lost: Ralph Norman, Pamela Evett, the lieutenant governor, the current lieutenant governor, and Nancy Mace, who are all pretty much going to be in. I don't think the field is set. I'm really not at liberty to tell you some of the backstory, but I think that there's more to come, and it's going to happen really quickly. I think Russell Fry, the congressman from the 7th District, I think Sherry Biggs, the congresswoman from the 3rd District, we got a deep bench, and that's a huge blessing. The wild card is President Trump. He knows we can't have a weak candidate. The Democrats are going to pour money in here, and we don't want to move resources from a Georgia or a North Carolina or another state that needs it into a ruby red South Carolina. So this is going to be entertaining, to say the least. They're all intimately qualified. I think it comes down to what Trump does. And let's face it, Mike Johnson has a razor-thin margin, too. He does not want to lose a sitting congressman. That'd be Sherry Biggs and Russell Fry. So the drama is going to be high, brother.
Well, you know, the other part of it is Ralph Norman, who we all love, House Freedom Caucus guy, I mean, is a rock-solid conservative, unfortunately, 73 years old. So you're looking at, okay, does the, you know, when you're electing a lawmaker, are you looking for the next Lindsey Graham, somebody that could be there for the next, you know, 20, 30 years? Or are you looking for another placeholder for the next, you know, for however long Lindsey's, well, his term was up. So you're looking at a 6-year term here. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
You know, Ralph's got to be one of the front runners. He's got his own money. He's been a very successful business guy. He's got great name ID. He's a solid conservative. No question, he's been all over the state, and he just ran for governor. So you got to think he's one of the front runners. How much they consider that factor, I don't know. You know, what does President Trump do? Pamela Evett just lost and got shellacked in the governor's race and had the Trump's endorsement and had the governor's endorsement. So that's another dynamic. And then you've got Nancy Mace. How does Trump see her? You know, and she play a major factor in this. And the real question is, how much money can they raise? They've all got the name ID. They just spent a bunch of money statewide running for governor a month ago. So, like I said, I don't think the field is set with those three. It's going to be interesting to watch. And I believe by the end of today or tomorrow, you're going to hear about some more names that jump in.
One name you didn't mention, my friend, Nikki Haley.
Yeah, I thought Nikki was in. And then I heard today, and somebody sent me a tweet, X post, that she said she's not going to get in. Nikki would have mixed it up, no question about it. She's still got a base here, and she's got the name ID to go out and win, and she can certainly raise the money that she'd have needed in a short ramp. But listen, this primary is August 11th. We went back and looked at state statute yesterday. The trigger is a sudden death or resignation of a sitting member, and then the governor appoints, but the filing opens on the second Tuesday following the event that triggers it. That's a week from tomorrow.
Wow.
Filings open a week, and then the primary is August 11th. So name ID and money matter, and whoever wins this is going to have to pull all that off really quickly.
You know, the other part of that, and by the way, we love Jim DeMint, and of course, you know, he was the senator. He'd be great, but again, he's got the same age issue, and I think I have to imagine the voters are going to be looking at age as a factor. But I want to step back for just a moment. There was some polling out there that showed Lindsey was going to be in a pretty tough race. I don't know how legitimate those polling numbers were, but do the Democrats have a strong enough, you know, candidate where they could make a run at this?
You know, I've seen the initial oppo file on Dr. Annie Andrews, and I know Lindsey was underwater in his primary at first too, and then he really campaigned and started putting a message out there. I don't think so, because she's for sexual mutilation of children. She's for, you know, killing babies up to and including birth, apparently. She's for defunding the police. She's got kind of a dream list for us to run against on the conservative side. I sure hope she can't win. I think the question is, how much money do the Democrats pour in here that makes us put money here that takes it from a state that is more of a competitive race? I think we'll win it regardless, but it could get interesting if we don't put the right person in place.
All right, Chad Connolly, a great intel there. A lot of intrigue, a lot of political intrigue in the Palmetto State. And we're going to be following all of that. Chad, good to see you, my friend. Thank you for joining us. Folks, we are going to have to take a very quick break here. By the way, this segment of the Todd Stern Show brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. It is true. Millions of Americans agree with President Trump, and they are making the switch to Newsmax. They're watching great shows with Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, Finnerty, and more. And if you're tired of big media, you want to start watching Newsmax. It is free to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access and get all of President Trump's most important events live. Once you start Newsmax Plus, you will not stop. Try it for free. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com, then download the app. It is super easy. Make the switch to Newsmax Plus today. All right. Welcome back, everybody. It is the Todd Stern's radio show. I mean, in all honesty, Dylan, I want to go back to this whole idea of radio shows that hate callers. That it makes absolutely no sense to me. I think the, you know, we have some of our regulars that we love hearing from a lot. I mean, for example, you've got the sweet Miss Patty in North Carolina and Joe from LJ, and you've got... I mean, all over the country, we have great callers and great listeners. I just don't understand radio show hosts that have that sort of disdain for their audience.
It's got to be some sort of snobby, like, I'm better, I know more than the callers. Like you mentioned it before, like the guy that, you know, didn't want to take callers, like his whole point was, well, they're not going to make anything known to what people would want to listen to.
I know it's the mentality of I know everything, you know nothing, people. You sit and you absorb knowledge.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's just not going to fly. That's not going to work. By the way, I mean, you could. I mean, we could do a three. Do you really want 3 hours of a lecture? Do you want 3 hours of me screaming at you? No, I don't think so. I don't even know if I could handle that. All right, hang tight, everybody. Hour three coming, or two coming up on the big show. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Live from the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's right. I love this American ride.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Big Show. Great to have you with us today, broadcasting border to border, coast to coast, across the Fruited Plain. And we have a jam-packed hour, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up, our good friend Wendy Patrick, the Newsmax contributor, will be joining us. Also, Dr. Keith Abloh is here later on in the program, and we're going to be taking your calls. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. Again, that number, 901-260-5926. Have a bit of news to share with you coming out of South Carolina, where we understand Governor McMaster is going to be making an announcement later this afternoon. We believe 4 o'clock Eastern time, the governor is going to be making an announcement about the temporary fill-in for the late Senator Lindsey Graham. That person expected to be the late senator's sister, Darlene. So you just heard Chad Connolly from Faith Wins talking about that in the last hour. Also getting word that President Trump is urging Congressman Russell Fry to jump into the Senate race as well. So we'll keep you updated on all of those moving parts. Well, one of the great success stories of the Trump administration has been what's happening in the area of the Department of Homeland Security. We have seen this administration attack crime head on and go after the bad guys and also go after all of those that are coming into this country illegally. I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to Deputy Secretary Troy Edgar. Mr. Secretary, great to have you with us today.
Hey, thank you, Todd. Great to be on the show. Appreciate it.
And I have to tell you, congratulations. I know you guys catch a lot of you-know-what in the mainstream media, but I hope you guys know that the average American is incredibly grateful for the work that you guys have been doing.
Yeah, no, I see it. The Secretary and I travel all over the U.S., and we get a lot of people coming up to us that are very appreciative of all the work, and we're just grateful to serve the president and carry out his agenda.
I know one of the things that we've been huge proponents of the Memphis, for example, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. That's my hometown, and our city was under siege. I mean, just some of the finest people in the nation live here. We have one of the most beautiful, quirky cities in America, and yet the Democrats have just allowed the criminals to run roughshod. The president sends in all of the help, the federal assets, and it's really been amazing to see that crime, the crime numbers just here in the Memphis area, have completely plummeted.
Yeah, you know, that was a very successful task force that we put together. I think we had over, 10,000 arrests. A lot of firearms found, probably over 1,700. And like you said, our big focus within Homeland Security and working with all of our law enforcement partners has been results. You know, really focusing on just making sure that we're doing more than just putting presence on the street, but actually getting results for the American people.
Well, let's talk about those results. And what have you guys been seeing nationwide?
Well, I think, you know, coming from Homeland Security, you know, obviously, you know, my focus today is I want to talk to you about the Homeland Security Task Force, which really focuses on transnational crime, you know, the cartels, FTOs, et cetera. But, you know, you mentioned that we get a lot of stuff when we're on the road from different people, and a lot of that has to do with our focus on deportation or what we call Title 8 immigration. And so, you know, a lot of that activity, you know, we've been very focused. If you look at what the president ran on his campaign platform and that the secretary is kind of enveloped into his strategy and I execute on a daily basis is, you know, first of all, seal the border. And from that, focus on deportations. And then at that point, be able to go out there and make sure that we have an effective and running law enforcement where a Homeland Security Task Force fits in. So it's, you know, we've been out there with great partnerships, you know, in different cities, and we still have challenges in cities and states that are still covered in sanctuary.
Well, and that's, you know, that, of course, is going to be a long-term issue. I mean, this is a problem that didn't happen overnight, and I know you guys must get frustrated when you see, you know, conservatives of the media saying, all right, this is good, but we want more.
Yeah. Well, you know, Todd, you mentioned, you know, you're from Memphis. I'm from California. And so even just last week, I was with the Homeland Security Task Force. I was out meeting in Los Angeles, you know, meeting with the law enforcement partners there. And a big part of our success for this initiative, Homeland Security Task Force, is to really kind of increase our partnerships. And, you know, we really can't leave out those you know, those cities like sanctuary cities like Los Angeles and big states because a lot of the crime is happening there. So we, you know, outside of just trying to focus on, I'll call it friendly states and cities, we have to establish those relationships in those sanctuary cities where major crime is happening.
Is there going to be an effort, and this may be above your purview, but again, defunding these sanctuary cities, what are some things that can be done at the federal level? You know, if these sanctuary cities are not going to be cooperative with Homeland Security, do you guys have workarounds?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that, you know, the president's been very focused on is using the whole of government. You know, when we kind of go through, I mean, Homeland Security, if you look at it from the highest level, 23 different components. We talk a lot about, you know, law enforcement, like CBP, ICE, et cetera, Secret Service. But, you know, we also have tools out there in FEMA where we administer the, you know, a lot of the emergency declaration activity and some of the different grants that are out there that help law enforcement. And, you know, those are areas that we've got to work with partners. And, you know, if the cities and the states aren't being as cooperative, you know, we got to be able to use the tools that are out there. And I think you had heard, and I'm not saying that this was going forward, but you heard our secretary about 3 weeks ago talk about pulling customs from major international airports right in the middle of the sanctuary cities, just as a lever, you know. And obviously we had a pretty good reaction from the airline industry from that. But I mean, it's those types of things, is that, you know, law enforcement at the federal level, we have to do this because it's our, you know, it's basically what's written into the laws and the authorities. But where we prioritize is really at the discretion of the secretary. And I think that's something that we've been very focused to, you know, to try and balance.
DHS Deputy Secretary Troy Edgar joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line today. And, of course, when you look at all the headlines, Miami Homeland Security Task Force charges dozens in South Florida with federal firearm and drug trafficking crimes. You mentioned Los Angeles gang members on sex trafficking charges. It's just insane, the level of crime out there.
Yeah, you know, like I said, Todd, at the beginning, you know, we really are focused on results. You know, this Homeland Security Task Force that, you know, the president, day one when he came in, he wanted, you know, I think everybody read, he had about 190 different executive orders, but this one was very focused and specific, which established kind of a whole of government, kind of combining, you know, what would have been all these different individual law enforcement silos, whether it was in ATF, FBI, DEA, the Marshals, Bureau of Prisons, or even Homeland Security, HSI, the Homeland Security Investigations, which focuses on counterterrorism and that transnational crime. Those groups were working independently. So President Trump, we inherited a pretty dysfunctional group when we first came in, and basically what that executive order did is set up this Homeland Security Task Force and put everything under a unified command. And, you know, we kicked that off in January and went live in September. And it's been very successful, and we've been able to really kind of get a good big jump start on a lot of the stats that you started to talk about just a few minutes ago.
I mean, it's a big phrase, and maybe we should break it down for our listeners, transnational criminal organizations. What specifically are you guys talking about, and who are you guys targeting?
Yeah, these are primarily gangs and cartels. So if you remember, the president came out and he basically determined, you know, some very specific transnational criminal organizations. And from those, once they were determined to be, you know, in this determinant, they were able to use different authorities, you know, both in law enforcement and intelligence, Department of War. So basically it gives us the authority to really throw everything that we could around the whole of government. But, you know, if you kind of look at that and you see, you know, it really focuses on stuff like you talked about, you know, the financial crimes, anything to do with drugs, human trafficking. And then as we have been getting really smarter, we've been going off after a lot of cyber crime and stuff like that to really kind of make sure that, you know, we're really putting the whole of government on them.
Mr. Secretary, I really appreciated something you wrote on your X feed, and by the way, or actually the secretary posted and you reposted regarding Congresswoman Jayapal. And I think it really does highlight what you guys are dealing with. It's not just that you're fighting the bad guys and you're trying to stop very dangerous criminals and these transnational criminal organizations, but you're also having to fight Congress. I mean, Jayapal writing, every single person who voted to give billions more to ICE last month should be ashamed. Not one more cent of our taxpayers' dollars should fund this lawless rogue agency. The secretary responding to the congresswoman, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for protecting criminals and prioritizing them over law-abiding American citizens. He is absolutely correct about that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The secretary and I just got done with three hearings on Capitol Hill about our appropriations and questions. And, you know, Todd, you really do, you know, I'm sure down deep inside on both sides of the aisle, they really care about America, but it's a different view of America. And, you know, when you see stuff like as you presented there with Jayapal, it's hard, you know, when you look at this, especially when you're on the streets and you see actual real crime happening, you see, you know, that we're really focused on, you know, trying to help families, trying to go make sure that these people don't come into the country and commit these things. And you, on the other side, you, it's about protecting their rights and freedoms. It's pretty mind blowing.
It is. Well, we certainly appreciate the great work that you guys are doing. What is it that the American people can do? You know, we have a pretty active audience and they love supporting, especially law enforcement. What is it that they can do to help you guys out in the mission there at DHS?
Well, I think right now the mission, if you think about it, I always tell people that people don't realize DHS in total touches a lot of people everyday life. You know, whether you're going to the airport and checking in through TSA, you're going to get a passport and you're dealing at the airport and going with customs, all these different activities, you know, we're always, having the interaction. I just don't think people realize that these people that are doing all the work are actually, you know, and really completing the activities that the law has asked us to do. And I think a lot of people don't have a complete appreciation for that. And I know your audience definitely is supportive, but, you know, it's right now, again, going back to the Homeland Security Task Force, we really are trying to focus on the local law enforcement partnerships. So, you know, working with, the county sheriffs and the police and the police chiefs and really in these communities and trying to make sure that we have a good relationship and we communicate with them. And I think, with your audience just being out there and being supportive, I think that's just very helpful.
Are you getting that support, for example, from a place like in Memphis, Tennessee? Are you getting support from local law enforcement leadership?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different. It's when it really kind of starts at the top. You know, when you go into a state with a governor, a city with a mayor, and, you know, county leaders, you know, it really, they make a determination if they're going to accept the help. And, you know, one thing that President Trump and Secretary Mullen has been focused on is that, you know, we don't start out by just saying that we're just policing one side of the aisle. We're here to help the American people, and that really shouldn't matter what side you're on. But I think that, you know, when we're going out to these different locations, I think Memphis being one of them, you know, it's been very helpful. Even D.C. here in Washington, D.C., you know, we've with the mayor here, you know, she got behind our focus and trying to make D.C. safe. And, you know, as we're celebrating the Freedom 250 and doing all the different types of activities that we've been focused on, you know, the city is, you know, very supportive. And so and when you see that, just like the statute called out for Memphis, it had a significant decrease in crime.
It's been pretty remarkable. All right, Mr. Secretary, we're going to have to leave it there, but we appreciate you joining us and giving us an update on what you guys are up to there at DHS. Keep up the great work.
Appreciate it, Todd. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Deputy DHS Secretary Troy Edgar, joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line today. Those guys are rock stars. All right, we've got to take a quick break here, ladies and gentlemen. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. You know, a lot of people think a reverse mortgage means more debt, but what if it actually meant less stress? If you're over 62, you've spent decades paying into your home, and the question is, should your home only work for the bank or could it work for you? Well, my friends at Mortgage Movement help homeowners understand how a reverse mortgage might actually eliminate monthly mortgage payments and create more breathing room in retirement. They're offering a free customized retirement mortgage options plan built specifically around your goals, your numbers, and your timeline. It's not a one-size-fits-all advice you're going to get. You're going to see real scenarios, you're going to get real options, and you're going to learn why reverse mortgages today are far more regulated, more transparent, and consumer-friendly than most people realize. Here's what I want you to do. Give them a call, 580-REVERSE, or you can go to their website, movement.com/Starnes. You're going to be able to get a free consultation today. You're going to receive your retirement mortgage plan today. Call 580-REVERSE or visit movement.com/starnes. Mention my name and they're going to send you a free book on reverse mortgages. Again, 580-REVERSE or visit movement.com/starnes. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Tom Stearns Radio Show. No, Dylan, I don't know if he's alive or not. I'm talking about Mitch McConnell. You know, it was I sort of went viral over the weekend, and I didn't mean to go viral. You know, Scott Jennings, he's the guy over at CNN. He's the token conservative over there. So a lot of people may not realize this, but he is cut from the cloth of the establishment Republican. And I know people say, but he's a conservative. But, Todd, he's a conservative. Yes, but Mitt Romney would look like a conservative if he were on CNN. I'm just telling you. So, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that he's really not all that conservative at the end of the day. So, anyway, Scott Jennings went out there and he was talking about how he had talked to Mitch McConnell because everybody thinks he's dead. And nobody knows. Nobody knows. So here's what I did. And this got 3.1 million views on X. And I didn't mean for it to. Everybody's sharing this. And I didn't even make a commentary about it. But CNN issued a statement to the Daily. This is what I wrote. CNN issued a statement to the Daily Beast regarding Scott Jennings' alleged 20-minute chat with Senator Mitch McConnell. Quote, as a CNN political commentator, Scott Jennings is not a full-time employee or journalist for the network. His account of a personal conversation with Senator McConnell reflects his experience and is not CNN reporting. So I just asked a simple question after this, and here's what I asked. Was CNN not able to verify their own political commentator's reporting? Which is a fair question. It's like, are they throwing this guy under the bus? What's going on? And ladies and gentlemen, do you think Mitch McConnell has, did he welcome Lindsey Graham to the pearly gates? 901-260-5926. No, that's not uncouth. I mean, everybody's wondering. We'll be right back. And hello, everybody. This is welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Not quite sure what happened there or if we are on the air. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. I have some headphone issues that we probably need to get worked out, guys. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. And guys, if you could just somebody bring in some headphones here to the studio, that would be great. You know, one of the other big stories we've been following, of course, is the Charlie Kirk trial, and at least the preliminary hearing. The trial has yet to get underway. I want to bring into the conversation a good friend of this program. She is a great Newsmax contributor and columnist, Wendy Patrick. Wendy, good to have you with us today.
Always a pleasure to join you, Todd.
All right, Wendy, let's just get right to this. I know you've actually been covering all of this preliminary hearing, and there was really some fascinating courtroom drama last week.
Oh, Todd, that's the understatement of the week, isn't it? Yes, there was. And I can see why you would use the word trial, because you would think that's what you were watching, with the extent to which the evidence was developed, was questioned, cross-examined, authenticated, distributed, published to the jury and to the public. But what we actually saw last week, believe it or not, was just that, the preliminary hearing, which, Todd, is a probable cause hearing, usually not meant to last longer than a day. But here they really did develop a lot of the dots they needed to connect, because unlike many murders that are just open and shut, this one had a lot of circumstantial evidence that the prosecutor took time to put together. And I have to say, if I were to summarize last week, although this was an assassination in broad daylight, the prosecution had to put together the reality. The defendant was a man with a plan on and murder on his mind, as he chose the spot to take that sniper shot and then admitted it to his roommate afterwards. So we saw all that. It took 5 days, but now it's in evidence.
Wendy, here's what gets me is that for weeks, 4 months really, leading up to this preliminary hearing, there were so many conspiracy theories that were being spewed into microphones and podcasts around the nation. You've heard stuff from from Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, and the list goes on and on and on. And I'm wondering if any of those, and by the way, everything they alleged turned out to be disproved in that courtroom.
Yeah, you know, I often say that credible evidence is the antidote for conspiracy theories, because you can't just listen to podcasters. You have to actually see what's happening in the courtroom. You know, one thing about this preliminary hearing that distinguishes it from a lot of other cases, I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years, Todd, and you don't often see detail. I mean, the judge had both sides jump through hoops. No, it didn't even matter what kind of evidence that they were seeking to admit. They talked about publication, reliability, relevancy, hearsay. I mean, everything was so well vetted that it's hard to have a conspiracy theory around evidence that's been so argued by both sides and deemed to be authentic and admissible. So I often say, you know, if you're wondering what this case is about, don't, you know, watch the court of public opinion, watch the trial, watch the preliminary hearing, watch the court of law. And Todd, we're just beginning in terms of what's going to be presented. A probable cause hearing is just that. It does not involve introducing the huge swath of evidence that's going to be admissible at trial. In fact, it intentionally is not for that purpose, because we're trying to find a way to select a fair jury that'll ensure this defendant receives due process. You can't do that if you have everything in the kitchen sink out there in the public realm for them to consume, when perhaps not all of it will be admissible at trial.
All right, so the hearing has ended, and what was the point of the preliminary hearing itself?
The point of the preliminary hearing itself was to introduce enough evidence for the judge to decide if there's enough to bind it over for trial. Now, normally, you know, that is a cut and dry case. It happens automatically, and certainly there's plenty of evidence here, far more than they would need, but the defense is allowed to challenge that. And sometimes it happens orally at the end of a prelim, and the prosecution would have been okay with that, but the defense asked for extra time. So the judge set this September 1st date for oral argument and for him to make a final ruling. Now, what's going to happen in the meantime? Todd, in the meantime, is going to be the most unsexy behind-the-scenes jobs that we do as prosecutors and defense attorneys, researching and writing. Both sides are going to brief all of the issues, and the defense goes first. So they have, you know, 2 weeks or so to deliver their brief. The prosecution gets time to respond. Judge gets time to read it. So actually, September 1st, Todd, is not an unduly burden the future court date. It's a fair court date, considering the amount of work that has to be done between now and then behind the scenes.
All right. Wendy Patrick joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Do we have any indication of why the judge did not rule on Friday, and what happens now? What are we waiting on?
Yes, we do. He told us why he didn't rule on Friday, because the defense is entitled to, if they wish, brief issues that they would like the judge to consider with respect to the bindover. Now, we worry if he didn't do this, it would potentially compromise the integrity of the conviction and maybe even the death sentence down the line if a reviewing court, a higher court, an appellate court were to say, wait a minute, you should have had the defense have an opportunity to knock out some of those charges or take the death penalty off the table if they wished. So that's the reason he's indulging that request. You know, the prosecution can't really argue with that. Nobody wants to see the case tried again. What happens now, Todd, is the judge will rule on September 1st, and hopefully also on that date, they'll set a trial. That is going to be at least a good date of potential closure in the future for Erica Kirk and the Kirk family.
Wendy Patrick joining us on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Wendy, in addition to the court case, a lot happening in the world of politics. Of course, everybody's been focused on South Carolina, but there in California, you guys are fighting the good fight. Gavin Newsom is under fire, and I think a lot of people are just fed up with the way the Democrats have run California into the ground. Just curious how things are going out on the campaign trail. What are you hearing about Steve Hilton?
Well, I know there's a lot of support for Steve Hilton, and that has been a groundswell of support before, including, and after the primary. And I love to see that. And, you know, it's one of those races that it has been closely watched for a very long time, but neither candidate can deny the reality that Californians are frustrated. Affordability, economy, the borders, community safety, healthcare, education. I mean, I can go on and on. Problems. On the minds of many people most recently continues to be the prices. You know, we've been promised prices are going to go down. We've been promised the cost of living is going to become easier. I think patience is beginning to wane. And that's also probably because we have very hot summers here. So it's just a compilation of factors that make people irritable. But I've just heard that a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised if both candidates are scrambling behind the scenes to see, can we give any kind of short-term relief of any kind so that we can all make it through the summer and begin to focus on the midterms.
You know, it's a great point. There was a piece in Fox News today. Kristen Atlas, or Altus rather, was the writer. It was in Fox Business. Food costs have surged 32% over the past 5 years. Middle class families among the hardest hit. And the point of this is that many Americans are now having to turn to their credit cards just to keep food on the table. This is according to a study they cited there in Fox News. The Urban Institute is the organization they reached out to. Are you guys seeing that issue out in California?
Yes. And Todd, that has to be one of the very top issues that's being discussed. And I mean, being discussed around the kitchen table as well as on the airwaves. You know, the fact that you have to use a credit card and then you can't pay off the credit card, then interest begins accruing. It is an absolutely downward spiral. And that is one of the reasons that I think so many people are becoming so savvy as to, you know, let's really devote time trying to figure out how we can cut costs in other areas. I often used to say this is probably why there aren't as many cars on the freeway nowadays. I mean, it's become intolerable, and it's such a beautiful place to live in terms of climate, in terms of, you know, I love the people there. I'm a California native, but how do you continue to make it work? You know, the California dream is becoming unaffordable. So that is going to be one of the issues front and center for both candidates as they go towards the election.
All right. Wendy Patrick, always good having you on the show. We're going to be looking ahead towards the September court date, and we'll definitely get you on between now and then. But we always appreciate the great work and commentary you bring to the show.
Thank you, Todd. See you soon.
All right. Wendy Patrick, everybody. Sorry, we had some hiccups there, a little connectivity issues. All right. We're going to take a break here. I am curious of this Fox News study. It says an overwhelming majority of working class Americans are now having to use their credit cards to buy groceries. And the problem there is that now people are having a very difficult time trying to figure out how in the world they're going to be able to pay their credit card bills. And I'm wondering if that is you, ladies and gentlemen. Have any of you had those issues where you are finding people within your circle of friends and they're just having a difficult time figuring out how to put food on the table? This study that was cited by Fox News, I want to bring this back up. This is pretty fascinating. It's that 63% of working class Americans ages 18 to 64 charged grocery purchases to credit cards last year. More than one quarter of those individuals encountered repayment struggles. Additionally, the share of individuals who failed to make the minimum payment on credit cards used for grocery purchases increased from 7.1% in 2023 to 8.7% in 2025. Buy now, pay later installment plans were used by 8.9% of adults to secure food, and more than a third of those users failed to make an installment payment on time. Those hit hardest by the food cost, middle-income earners. Middle-class families earning between 200% and 400% of the federal poverty level seeing missed minimum credit card payments on food jump from 9.3% to 12.3%. So there you have it. Again, more evidence that even though Washington may tell us that everything is hunky-dory with the economy. Things are not hunky-dory with the economy just yet. All right, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Happy to have you with us today. Getting some indication that there has been some sort of an incident at Senator Susan Collins' office in Maine. So this would be her district office where a massive mob has just stormed the office building. This was happening, we believe, in Portland. The mob trying to break into her office. You know, here's what gets me. And by the way, all of this is because over the weekend, there was a shooting. A driver tried to ram ICE agents with his vehicle, and ICE agents opened fire. By the way, we've got video of the mob storming into the office. They're breaking into the senator's office on ToddStearns.com. I would encourage you to go and check out the video there as we follow this, the developing story. By the way, same thing happened in Memphis, Tennessee. Same thing happened in Houston. So here's a rule of thumb for all you illegal aliens out there. If you don't want to get shot, don't try to ram an ICE officer with your vehicle. I mean, it really is. It's really that simple, actually. I mean, it really is. So there you have it. We will keep you updated. But again, the breaking news headline out of Maine, anti-ICE rioters are storming the office of Senator Susan Collins. And you can watch that video exclusively at ToddStearns.com. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Dylan, have you seen the video coming out of Yellowstone of the grandpa that got attacked by the bison?
I have. I've seen the video.
What the heck?
That's a big animal.
Grandpa went airborne.
He did. He went 8 feet in the air, I heard.
He's okay. I think he got banged up. He's going to be okay.
Some say he was laughing and making jokes after it happened, too.
Well, you got to. I mean, he just survived. I think the bison was like looking for Mrs. Bison. Mm-hmm. I think that's what was going down.
So you're saying he may have mistaken this man for a bison?
Well, no, but it's a good thing he did not. That would have been very awkward.
It would have been way worse.
Actually. Yeah. Poor grandpa would have been rocking with a bow or something. Like, bow in his legs.
I didn't even know bison like did that kind of charge. Like he charged at him and then like did the bull, like he threw him up in the air.
There are literally signs around Yellowstone, do not pet the furry cows.
Yeah.
So this was like an assault cow. It was this was not like a gentle little, you know, no. Betsy the milk cow.
That thing was running fast, yeah, too.
This was an assault bovine.
Did you see when it got stuck like on the tree? It almost took the tree down.
Yeah.
Like that's a terrifying animal.
Can't even imagine. And the poor guy, grandpa, was trying to run around. He was trying to hide. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they were trying to antagonize the bison. It certainly doesn't look like that from the video.
No, I mean, maybe they were just walking by and, you know, sometimes, and I went to Yellowstone and we were looking for black bears, which is arguably a little worse than a bison. They could, attack you and run at you the same way. And we saw one, and there was a bunch of people that get out of their cars and actually stand around pretty far, but, you know, could be farther if you're safe from the black bear. So it might have been this situation. I don't know if they were antagonizing him, though.
It just seems to me that if you're if you're at Yellowstone, it's like you're in the zoo without the cages.
Essentially, you are.
So you're at the mercy of the animal kingdom.
Yep. I mean, it's a national park. They're not going to, you know, they don't want you to touch those animals. Those are sacred animals there.
His name is Carl Isom McDaniel, and he's from Washington State. And I don't know too many men with a hyphenated last name, but I'm not sure what to make of that. He suffered multiple broken bones. But he's going to be okay. I mean, the guy was in pretty good spirits. And that could have been gone a very different way. I mean, he could have been killed. But anyway, the bull was apparently roaming the campground and charging at other groups of campers. And that's why you had a guy there. He's a professional photographer, and he was the guy taking the video. So there were a lot of tourists around. I mean, this could have gotten really bad. Apparently, the bison charged first at a small group of teenage boys, and they were able to run away. Oh, here we go. You know what the problem is? They're saying the bison was apparently experiencing a surge of testosterone because this is like the start of mating season.
Oh, man.
So the bull was wallowing in dirt next to a road. When he got up, it was kicking like a rodeo horse. It was very agitated, and at that moment, a pickup truck drove by, and then that's when the grandpa and the grandson, so that was the grandson. Bison can weigh up to 2,000 pounds. I'm just thinking, oh, my God, this could be me at Shelby Farms because we've got like a whole like mess of those bison
this
over there.
This is true. I was
buffalo
thinking of that.
Or whatever they call them.
I was worried for you, Todd.
I'm not sure I could run as fast as grandpa. At that point, what do you do? What do you do if you've got a 2,000-pound bison chasing after you? All right, got to take a break here. 901-260-5926. Hey, go check out that video over at ToddStarnes.com.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Big Show. Great to have you with us today. I want you to write down our telephone number. You're going to need this if you plan on calling in. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. By the way, I want to direct your attention to ToddStarnes.com, our website. We have video of this crazy situation in Maine right now where a giant mob has stormed at the office of Senator Susan Collins. This is all because ICE agents took out a 26-year-old man in Biddeford, Maine. The state police are saying that the guy tried to use his vehicle as a weapon and tried to run over immigration and customs enforcement agents. The FBI is leading the investigation. The police chief confirming all of this information. According to Senator Angus King, Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen told him the victim had been given an order to leave the country, weaponized the vehicle, and was shot by an ICE agent. So that's all we know at this time. Protests are underway near the scene and also at Susan Collins' office. My apologies, that office in Biddeford, Maine. So we'll keep you updated on all of the developments there. We have video at ToddStarnes.com, and I would encourage you to go to the website and check out all of the information. We'll keep updating the info. Well, our good friend, Dr. Keith Abelow, New York Times bestselling author, has a brand new book out called A Matter of Life and Death, The Importance of Being Cain. I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and welcome Dr. Abelow. Good to have you back with us, Doc.
It is an absolute pleasure, Todd. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the new book. And those of you that are watching us, ladies and gentlemen, on YouTube, Rumble, and Facebook Live, you'll see a copy of the book, a beautiful cover of the book. And you need to be getting yourself a copy of this. Dr. Abelow, we were just talking about Maine, and your book happens to be set in New England.
It is. It's set in Newburyport, Mass., which is where I am sitting right now. It's the birthplace, by the way, of the Coast Guard, for those who need a reference point beyond the fact that I'm sitting here. And it is the place that Alex Kane comes, my main character, in A Matter of Life and Death, for a kind of radical reinvention. He wants to remake himself. And Todd, I know you believe, as I do, that that's possible. No matter where you are in life, you can make a comeback. And his method of doing so is very unusual. I won't give it away, but but he endeavors to make that happen here where the Coast Guard was born and where there is, by the way, the oldest intact retail district in America. Who knew?
This is it's going to be a fun book to read. It'll be out, what, July 30th, and you'll be able to get it print, ebook, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books, you're going to be able to get a copy of A Matter of Life and Death, The Importance of Being Kane. In addition to being an author, you're an executive coach, you're a celebrity psychiatrist. I mean, you've really helped a lot of people along your career path and your career journey.
It's been a privilege. And, you know, you can't do that without the immeasurables. So in terms of remaking people, which I feel so privileged to have been involved in so many people's lives and hopefully been helpful, but you can't do it without things like intuition and empathy and a connection to a higher power than yourself. I like to think I have pretty good listening skills, but when you are able to heal someone by listening and speaking to that person, that's something about things like God and the universe and immeasurable variables. It's not just serotonin and norepinephrine. You won't find healing just on a CAT scan, ever.
I know, at least in this business, when you know you're in the public arena, and I remember when I left Fox News back in 2019, it's like, all right, what is next? And I would, you know, I sort of carved a new path, but you know, a lot of people just get caught up in their job or whatever, and that becomes the essence of who they are. And when that goes away, everything else sort of unravels. Have you seen that before in your career?
It's so true that when people lose that anchor, if they've been invested in a position or a person, a relationship, whatever it might be, you can feel very much untethered. You can feel as if your life is ending. It's not. It's interesting that we're tempted to walk out on our own life stories. But if you're in a cinema, for instance, and the main character is in trouble, have you ever seen someone throw their popcorn away and say, hey, Tom Cruise is in a jam, let's get out of here? No, everybody sits there and they say the same thing. I wonder what's going to happen. And it's not that easy, but it's what is called for in our own lives. I wonder what's going to happen.
And isn't that the whole essence also of being an American, is that, you know, we love those comeback stories. You know, as much as, you know, people sort of get, when we see one of our stars fall, you know, there's all that attention. But at the same time, when they make that comeback and they're able to step back onto the stage, you know, people cheer. They love that kind of stuff.
They do. And why do they love that? They love that because people who are willing to look at the dark chapters, do a kind of self-examination in depth, not turn away and run away, but instead face anything and everything, they can reclaim the next and best chapters. It's a question of saying, listen, maybe this was kind of meant to happen in order to improve me, not to do me in. And if you have that perspective, you're very hard to defeat. And people aren't defeated as long as they are willing to sort of wait for the next chapter and participate, right? So Noah built an ark. He didn't just say, you know, hey, it's going to rain a lot, I believe it. He did the work.
Dr. Abloh, I'm not sure how we should read this into the book, but this was set in the same town as the town where you treated Hunter Biden.
Yes. And there are those who say, well, what was he doing coming to a conservative for help? The answer is suffering is an equal opportunity kind of employer. It certainly is the case. I don't care anybody's political beliefs when I'm treating them for anything, including drug addiction. But yes, so Biden, Hunter Biden, came to Newburyport. By the way, I'm not saying this because a psychiatrist wouldn't tell, but his laptop said it. And he said it. And so now it seems rather foolish for me not to agree. Yeah, sure. He came to Newburyport. He was here for some period of time healing. And Newburyport has that about it. It has a sense of rebirth about it. And his own journey, we could be cynical, but let's not for a moment. I like to say, here's somebody who was inhaling crack cocaine by his own admission. And then is it an accident that he then exhales India ink onto rice paper? You may like his art, you may hate it, but is it an accident that he feels as though he's creating beautiful things with the same breath with which he inhaled crack cocaine? I guess I like that poetry, even though I hate his politics.
It is interesting, you know, and I've sort of observed from a distance the transformation. It's Hunter Biden is it's like he's coming back into the public arena. And I'm wondering, you know, if you're starting to notice that as well, and why is it that people are willing to, you know, to give this guy a second look?
Man, I think it is exactly what you're talking about, Todd. It's this sense we love a comeback. Americans really don't write people off. We believe that people can be redeemed. I wish he would stop saying that I was the source of the laptop, which is craziness. He's just throwing up a smokescreen. And, you know, I might have to give him another diagnosis or something if he keeps up with that. But that's craziness. But nonetheless, I think Americans want to believe the best of people. Sometimes it goes awry. You know, there are those in this country, call them progressives, who would give the whole country away based on a desire to believe that one element of the population or many elements who say they hate us really don't, and they can be remade. That's toxic, and that's a road to nowhere. It's sort of the Walking Dead. I really believe that to some extent progressives are looking for the blood of others because they feel anemic themselves. You can't reawaken a vampire.
The name of the new book by our friend Dr. Keith Ambelow, A Matter of Life and Death, The Importance of Being Cain. That's Cain with a K, and it's available July 30th, but you can pre-order now wherever you get your books. You know, I'm just curious, you have helped a lot of people over the years, from regular Joes, I imagine, to, you know, cabinet members. When you're doing that, when you're working with these folks, do you treat them differently, or do everybody pretty much have the same issues, whether you're, you know, working a blue collar job or you're, you know, working in the government?
You know, you should join my practice. You ask the best questions, man. I'm telling you, it's people struggle with the same things. When it comes right down to it, you already identified one of them. When your job changes or you feel like, man, I've been doing this a long time and now I can't or won't be doing it. When you lose someone you love, when you lose a dog, when you're trying to take account of your life and you realize, man, they didn't love me very well as a kid. I'm carrying the scars. You can be a cabinet member. You can be a candidate for United States Senator, or you can be a guy who renovates kitchens. It doesn't matter. That's the commonality of man. And the reason why the things that really matter are like, do your kids feel that you loved them? And do you, and are you connected with God? And these are the immeasurables that define people. It isn't, I've never had somebody in the years of practicing psychiatry and coaching people, I've never had someone come in and say, you know, I really have positive feelings about my parent because he hit it out of the park and he was a world beater. He made so much dough. No, everybody says the same thing. I really think he loved me. He was there for me. That is what binds us together. Those stories, those narratives, which are the same no matter what your station in life.
I keep going back to, you know, when you look at somebody like a Hunter Biden, for example. As an example. But it's the, what the New Testament says about forgiveness and, you know, the 70 times 7, which is there's this infinite level of forgiveness within, you know, Christianity. But I do wonder sometimes a lot of people just won't even stop to forgive themselves. And I think at some point along the journey, I mean, you're the expert of this, but you have to forgive yourself.
I think that's one of the biggest hurdles is forgiving yourself. Because, again, we're creatures of narrative. And, you know, we tend to think, if only I had made a different decision, if only I could have escaped some of that pain or caused less pain. But, you know, you don't get to rewrite the past. Jay Gatsby taught us that as well as others. And the truth is, while you're still on the planet, you have infinite potential. You can turn things around. And I believe that those chapters or innings of your life that were not what you hoped they would be can be the prelude to the best chapters of your life story ever, partly because you've learned what you did. And I also believe that this was not random. Things like that that befall you or that you bring upon yourself, whatever it might be, it's not random. It's meant to make you stronger if you'll listen to it and get better.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Dr. Ambelow. And congratulations on the book, A Matter of Life and Death, The Importance of Being Cain. Ladies and gentlemen, pre-order a copy right now. You're going to want to read this. Dr. Ambelow, it's been a long time. We got to get you back on soon.
Love to come back on. Great seeing you, buddy.
All right. Good to see you as well. The great Keith Ambelow, everybody. And we appreciate his great work in helping people. And it's a terrific new book that he's written. So you're going to want to get a copy of that. All right. We've got to take a quick break here, folks. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stern's radio show. This situation in Maine is getting crazy. They're literally rioting in Maine right now over this guy that got shot. So a deranged leftist trying to run over ICE agents with his car. And are we surprised by this? I mean, Graham Plattner, when he wrote his letter withdrawing from the race, he signed it F ICE. I'm just saying here, it's but anyway, just hundreds of people are out, and you don't think of Maine as being a state that actually riots, but apparently most of them are all woke white chicks. And there are a bunch of, I would say hundreds of them, storming the office of Susan Collins. They're now inside the office of Susan Collins there in Maine. Here's my take on it, and I don't know, it's how people in Maine behave and act, but it just seems to me that we ought to be tasing people and hosing them down with bear spray. Not necessarily in that order, but if you're going to break into a senator's office and if you're going to cause mayhem, if I were the senator's office staff, I would be giving everybody a big old thing of mace, bear spray, raid. You know, some of those people are, you know, the hygiene, it's an issue. I mean, you don't want the cockroaches, right? I mean, nobody wants that. So it's always good to have that. So anyway, there you have it. It is getting ugly. They're in Biddeford, Maine, just outside of, it's about 17 miles or so. It's in the, I guess you could call it a suburb of Portland. We should call our good buddy Ray Richardson a WLOB, the Big Lobster. So anyway, I hope the senator's okay, but no doubt about it, there's a lot of violence right now in the state of Maine. We'll keep you updated. No, look, here's the thing. You cannot attack ICE agents. You can't do that. Not in America. And go unpunished. Ladies and gentlemen, ToddStearns.com is our website, and I would encourage you to go and check out the videos there. We've now have multiple videos posted of the violence happening in Portland, Maine. You're going to want to check out all of that. Also, I want to encourage you to get a copy of my brand new book. You can pre-order a copy right now. We are now under the 30-day mark for the new book to hit bookstores, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And it's a pretty straightforward book. You're going to love it. There's a lot of humor, and there's a lot of inspiration, and really a lot of challenge as well. A lot of challenge in this book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. Pre-order a copy right now, Barnes & Noble, Books-A-Million, Amazon, you know the drill. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Anybody find it weird? You know, today is the 1 year anniversary of the attack on President Trump, the assassination attempt. Here's Senator Marsha Blackburn. Cut number four, please.
We're recalling and remembering it was 2 years ago that there was the assassination attempt on President Trump's life at Butler, Pennsylvania. And we are ever so grateful that he survived that attempt. And I recall my conversation with him shortly after. He knew God spared his life and that there was a purpose for the work that he is doing. And indeed, all Tennesseans are grateful that he has been able to serve as our 47th president and delivering on the agenda that he promised he was going to work on. Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, certainly did that. And we are glad that God spared the life of President Trump. I mean, if his head had not been turned, we would be talking about a very different story right now. So we're certainly fortunate that President Trump was saved. God spared his life, and we are very grateful for that. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. So I am curious, though, about the lack of interest in what happened on that day. And so my question to you is, do you think that we ought to know, the American people ought to know exactly what happened in Butler County, Pennsylvania? I mean, none of it has made any sense to me at all. None of it has made sense to me at all. And it really does make you wonder, what exactly is the government hiding here? What is it that the government doesn't want us to know about what happened on that day? I'm naturally curious. I know a lot of people give me a hard time over that, but I'm just genuinely curious. You know, I do want to know was Lee Harvey Oswald the guy? I want to know, was Donald Trump, was he the victim of an internal plot within the federal government to take him out? I'm just curious. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Well, a man says he was fired. And Dylan, when we get this audio, be sure to listen. We may have a few words we have to bleep. But we're going to play some audio here in just a moment. But a man says he was fired from a Chili's in Denham Springs, Louisiana. Denham Springs is a suburb of Baton Rouge. And this guy says he was fired from the Chili's in Denham Springs because he called a female by her actual name and did not use they, them pronouns. So the guy's name is Wesley Kirk Ford Jr. He says, I'm not participating in this anymore. You're not going to shame me or force me to participate in all of this. It's a total violation of my First Amendment rights, my religious freedom, and my free speech. I mean, you feel bad for the guy. You wonder how many waiters and staffers have lost their jobs as a result of all of this, as a result of, well, not wanting to engage in the pronoun police. I say good for Mr. Kirk for standing up and taking a stand. I hate that the poor guy lost his job. Our understanding is he's gotten lots of interview requests in the aftermath of all of this. So anyway, By the way, Dylan, does he not look like somebody we know?
He kind of does, just a little bit.
Just a spitting image. Anyway, the poor guy filmed himself getting fired from Chili's for calling a trans employee by her dead name. And the dead name is Madeline. He said he didn't realize that he was going to catch the manager. By the way, I guess the manager was vaping in the Chili's. Is that permitted? But yeah, so the poor guy got fired. Unbelievable. So his name is Wesley Kirk Ford Jr. And he said that he's in need of a First Amendment civil rights attorney. He says he'll post more on what happened because he's fired up right now. Can't say I blame the poor guy. So there, there you go. What a story. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
This is a really weird time. I did not wake up this morning, you know, expecting to be a warrior in this culture war fight. But, you know, God puts us in positions that we don't really understand at the time. But one thing I know is that I'm not gonna let this go. This is wrong. This is an injustice. This is flat out that anybody even has to put up with this at work, much less get fired for doing nothing other than calling their coworker by their government name. I have never been fired from a job ever in my life before. I have never been asked to quit, resign. I have never been asked to resign. I've never been fired, period, ever. I've never been written up at a job. I have never been reprimanded, disciplined at any job. I have no disciplinary record at any job. And I got fired for the first time today from Chili's for doing the high crime of calling my coworker, whose name is Madeline, by her name, which is Madeline, and not referring to her as her chosen name, which is Fish. F-I-S-H, Fish. I'm too old to, I'm just getting too old to, and I'm at a point in my life where, like, I'm not participating in that anymore. Like, I don't care. I don't care. I'll put my foot down. And I'm just not participating in it. And nobody can make me. Nobody's going to shame me into participating in it. You're not going to force me by controlling my money. You're not, oh, you'll never get another job. People are telling me, oh, I'm never going to get another job because of it. You will never shame me or force me into changing who the fuck I am. Period. Not Chili's. Not any job. Not Oxford House, not any job. And this ain't my first time having to deal with this, but I stand up for myself. And this was teetotal and a total violation of my First Amendment rights, my religious freedom, my free speech, my free expression. All of it, this is a total violation of it. And I've been very overwhelmed today. I've been, you know, got a lot going on. I've been getting a lot of notifications on social media. Plus, everything else that I have going on in my brain about just now being unemployed and what does this look like? And having to figure this out in a time where it is nearly impossible to find a job anywhere. And so I'm in this situation, in this predicament, strictly because I called my coworker by her government name, and it is what it is. And would I do it again? Absolutely. I wish I would have done it sooner, to be honest.
All right. That was Dylan, that was the guy from Chili's in Denham Springs, Louisiana. Now, I'm sorry. Her name is Fish.
That is what she wanted to go by, yeah. Sounded
Fish.
Like it, yeah.
Yeah, That's kind
of
weird.
Out of all the names, that's the most interesting one, I think, that you could find.
There are photographs of this individual. She actually has a social media account. Fish is how she goes by. Oh, that's her. So her dead name is Madeline. And now she looks, it's kind of like if you were to take, I don't know, Orca, and give Orca bright orange hair, and then actually paint half of the orange hair aqua, that would be Fish.
So she is like trying to be a fish? She wants to be a fish?
I don't think she's trying. No. I just think she is. I'm trying to describe her.
You said Orca. Maybe it should have been Orca, not Fish. If her name was Erica, I bet you she would have gone by Orca.
Orca.
Or Orca.
Orca. Maybe Blowfish. Maybe. I don't know. It's she's a big girl. A big girl. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, but all I'm telling you is that she's got the I hate to stereotype, but it's the look. Everything except for I think she may have the nose ring. Mm. So there you go. I feel bad for this guy, I do think a lot of people are just done, right? They're just done.
If it's said he's too old to care about this stuff anymore.
Yeah, I think you get to a point where you just don't care about the pronoun stuff. I reached that point like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I think when I was 10. I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, someone has a name that they have and they've been given a name, why would you all of a sudden start calling them Fish?
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, can we go back to another story real quick? So the radio guy, you know, the radio industry people who hate talk show hosts that take callers, they especially loathe it when we talk to producers.
Okay.
So I guess he would be triggered by the conversation you and I are having.
It's the show. It's your show, Todd. I don't understand this.
You know, this is the problem with the radio industry. I mean, that is the problem. It's, you know, radio is the one form of communication where you are allowed to have, you're allowed to have that conversation. You cannot do that in any other medium. And now you've got these radio hosts out there that think they're all that in a bag of chips.
This is true. I like taking calls. I like when you take calls. Our listeners are really good, and they oftentimes have something really important to say.
We should probably poll our listeners.
Yes, we should.
Do you like the calls or not?
I think they're a little biased if they get to call in.
Yeah, I do too. Well, look, again, and we enjoy those conversations. So I'm not quite sure why. You know, look at Rush. So what these newfangled hosts are saying is that Rush Limbaugh got it wrong. That Sean Hannity got it wrong. That's what they're saying. That Lars Larson and Todd Stearns, that we got it wrong. You know, I have to tell you, I think we've been very successful doing what we do. And we don't bow down to any big corporation. You know, we don't think, I mean, look, I believe what I believe. You may disagree with that. You may agree with it. But at least you're able to call in and you're able to voice your opinion on this radio program. So look, if that's what the other guys want to do, okay, fine. They can do that, but there's no need to go around and castigate those of us who do, which, by the way, are very few, very few. And it makes you wonder why, you know. But anyway, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. We're very excited here in Memphis tonight. The flagship station, KWAM, hosting a big Republican debate. This is going to be a lot of fun. All four of the Republicans who are running for the 9th Congressional District are going to be joining me. I'm going to be moderating the debate. You'll be able to watch it live on ToddStearns.com or on our YouTube channels. We're going to be broadcasting it all over the place. But it's going to be a lot of fun as we talk about the issues and we figure out who is going to be the most qualified person to send to Washington, D.C. This is going to be a pickup seat for the Republicans in the House of Representatives, and that's why this is incredibly, incredibly important. So tonight, 6 o'clock in Central Time, 6 o'clock Central Time, the big 9th congressional district race in Tennessee, broadcasting on KWAM right here in Memphis, Tennessee. All right, let's go to the phone lines here, 901-260-5926, Richard in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. All right, Richard, what do you think here about these talk hosts that say absolutely no calls?
I think they need to be fired and replaced with new hosts that take calls.
You know, they say that callers lend nothing to the program at all, that it's really a crutch that hosts use. How do you respond to that? I mean, look, I grew up listening to people calling in and talking on the radio. I loved it.
I know. I did, too. And I don't care if people have an opinion different from mine. Sometimes it's caused me to change my opinion because when I examine the substance, turns out they're more right about it than I am. So I think the talk radio provides one hell of an educational service for the listening public. And, you know, if there are hosts out there who don't want to have callers express opinions, fire them. Get somebody in who does. I am just really happy that y'all are online and on air and doing what you do and doing it as well as you do.
Richard, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, we have a good time doing it. And I love, people always ask me, oh, what are your favorite segments of the show? It's when people call in. I mean, I love doing the interviews with lawmakers and our celebrity guests, and we're always going to do that. But for me, the most entertaining part of the show is when people like yourself call in and we can have a conversation.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, thanks for being on the air. Thanks for doing what you do.
Richard, you're a kind man. Thank you for that. And keep things going strong there in Middle Tennessee.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
All right, good guy right there. So there you go.
That's why we do it. That's literally why we do it.
It is. It's beyond me. And again, if that's how you want to do your show, but don't turn around and criticize the rest of us and say we're a bunch of schmucks for, you know, taking calls from listeners. What's wrong with you people? Unbelievable. All right. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, ToddStearns.com. This crazy story out of Maine where folks are rioting in the streets. You got to watch the videos. And we also have video of the actual accident, the car crash involving the ICE agents were basically, their lives were on the line, and some guy using his vehicle to ram the agents. We've got all that video, and you'll be able to check it out, and you'll be able to understand what ICE agents are doing. The lesson here, folks, do not use your vehicle to try and run over ICE agents, or you're going to get shot, possibly killed. And that's what happened in Maine today. So, again, ToddStearns.com. Be sure also pre-order a copy of the new book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America, book in stores August 11th. But you can pre-order a copy right now. Might even get it a day or two before the 11th. So that's why you want to pre-order the book. All right, been a great day, everybody. We will do it all over again tomorrow, noon to 3 Eastern, right here on your local favorite radio station. Get out there and be good, everybody.
When you're a maintenance engineer in a beverage manufacturing plant, you keep production lines moving and quality on track because there's no room for slowdowns. With Grainger's vast selection of high-quality motors, sensors, belts, and hard-to-find parts, you can get what you need fast and all in one place, so nothing gets in the way of getting the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.